Now this is more like it. Getting here 9 minutes before the show starts. I'm much more comfortable there. Not like last week when there was a snowstorm here in the Twin Cities and I got about a half hour head start and got here way early. I don't know what to do with myself if I'm that early. I feel like Will Smith and I Am Legend. I just kind of hello. But by the way, that new movie I Am Legend is, of course, a more faithful movie production of the, what was it, like 1954, something like that, novel, sci-fi novel by Richard Matheson, unlike previous incarnations. I think there's an Italian version of I Am Legend, but it wasn't called that. And, of course, there was the wildly deviating story, The Omega Man, starring Charlton Heston. But it'll be cool to be out next week. I hope it's good. Certainly love the original book. Well, I mean, anything by Richard Matheson, by and large, was cinematic in its writing, and it lends itself beautifully to being transferred onto film. Cross your fingers for this one. Although the sequences already that I've seen here, I'm going to digress for just a second, for the new sci-fi thriller I Am Legend that opens up, the sequences that I've seen remind me a lot of Sidney Poitier in that movie, what was it, the World, the Flesh, and the Devil, where he plays a miner that comes back up from the bowels of the earth after some sort of holocaust, and he's the only one left. Just that whole thing about where he's driving around trying to amuse himself because he has all the time in the world, and he has New York at his fingertips, and you know, it's got nothing else to do. So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Hope it's good. We may even find a way to work that into the show. Next week, got too much to get to tonight. Want to jump to it right away. Three guests, two that I'll get to in just a second. Dean Koontz is coming up next hour. It's my semi-annual chance on Coast to Coast to pull a total Chris Farley because I'm such a fan. And I just sit there and ask him stupid questions like, okay, you know that book, Odd Thomas? Yeah, that was really good. So I'll need your help. We may go to the phones early on that. Coming up, we'll do a little crypto news, though. The amazing Kreskin is back at it, and we'll tell you more about his prediction for president. Also, love robot updates from last week's show and an extended news segment with Charles Ostman, who, of course, is a global futurist of his own. We'll talk to him coming up in just a second about that Iranian nuke story. Plus, Anne Blake Tracy with her thoughts, what she hears in the story of the boy that did the shooting in Omaha, coming up before Dean Koontz next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Oh, I'll get crypto news here in just a second up on the blog. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, you can link up to my blog there. And actually, right there, right now, already, at the top of the fold on the blog, is a story from earlier in the week. I don't know if you heard about it, but there's apparently a coffin maker in Italy, I'm told, that has produced a sexy calendar. And it's a real thing. I when I wrote the blog, I wasn't sure that it could be confirmed. It has since been confirmed. But go see the pictures anyway. Imagine one of those calendars like you would see in some garage, like a mechanics bay somewhere, but it's like that, but it's with coffins. It's really sick, but apparently it's a real thing, and it's not intending to be a parody. Anyway, you can find that there if you link up to my blog at coasttocoastam.com. While you're there, check out these many of these news stories. Iran has sent a formal protest to Washington for spying on Iran's nuclear activities. Foreign Minister Motaki said Saturday in the wake of the latest U.S. report on the alleged Iranian weapons program, you know what we're talking about, where suddenly the U.S. just reversed itself. Suddenly said, well, yeah, it looks like our intelligence says they really aren't making nukes after all. And out of the blue, or at least seemingly to us, but not to Charles Ostman, and we'll ask him about that coming up a little bit later on. Anyway, Motaki said the American report earlier this week concluding that Tehran halted the atomic weapons development in 2003 and hasn't resumed it since indicated U.S. intelligence agencies based their findings on, quote, satellite and espionage activities, according to the official news agency. According to the report, the Iranian government has now taken this protest note and conveyed it to Washington by handing it over to the Swiss embassy in Tehran, because obviously Tehran and D.C. aren't speaking. The Swiss then handed the note off to the Canadians, who gave it to the governor of Michigan, who put it in President Bush's gym locker after fourth period. So I think that's how we got it. Anyway, no votes have been cast for the next president yet, but the amazing Kreskin already knows who won the next election. Amazing. You can link up to this story at coasttocoastam.com. The amazing Kreskin wrote the name on a piece of paper, had a rabbi sign it, and dropped it into a locked box on Thursday. Amazing. He left the box for safekeeping on a shelf above the bar at the World Bar, which is across the street from the United Nations. What's even more amazing than that is he got press coverage without ever even telling the press the answer, just where the answer is. Oh, wait, well, I take that back. Tell a lie. He did tell one person in the press the answer. So just in case that lock box is not secure enough, Kreskin's giving a copy to a talk show host on a New York radio station for safekeeping, because talk show hosts are amongst the most trustworthy and valuable human beings ever. We're like rabbis. Does the amazing Kreskin predict Barack Obama? Former Ambassador Andrew Young doesn't. Did you see this story? Civil rights icon Andrew Young says Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama is too young and lacks the support network to ascend to the White House. In a media interview posted online, Young also quipped that the Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton has her husband behind her, and that, quote, Bill is every bit as black as Barack. He's probably gone with more black women than Barack, Andrew Young said of former President Clinton, drawing laughter from a live television audience. Bet you Hillary wasn't laughing at that. That doesn't take the amazing Kreskin to figure that out. Last week, I spoke with the computer gaming guru and futurist David Levy about the future of companion robots. No sequitur there for Bill Clinton intended. How they were becoming more and more sophisticated and capable of providing human care. And then just days later, this story came out. Car maker Toyota has created a robot that can play Christmas carols on the violin. Did you see that? 5-foot-tall robot uses mechanical fingers to push the strings and plays the bow with its other arm. The car firm has also created a mobility robot which provides transport in places where conventional wheeled vehicles would fail, including steps, making it the ideal aid for all those hours of Christmas shopping. They say the mobility robot can move at speeds of 4 miles an hour, like a walking human, and travel up to a distance of 13 miles on 1 hour of battery charge. That is just like what we were talking about last week. And did you hear it play? Flawless classical music played on the violin by the robot. It was really cool. And, you know, just wait 40 years for love robots. That's what David Levy said last week. And those robots will be playing you like a Stradivarius, he says. Finally, speaking of companions, The Sun reports a parakeet in England has lived to the grand age of 10, thanks to his love of whiskey. The parakeet's name is Pikachu, has lived twice as long as the average parakeet, and his owners, Lisa and Gordon, reckon it's because of the booze. The bird clamps down on the side of Gordon's glass and helps himself by dipping his whole head into the booze. Lisa says he absolutely loves whiskey. He's just like a human. After a couple of sips, he gets all happy and starts singing. But if he goes over his limit, he starts biting and talking ugly. Hey, maybe that's who sent me that email last week, remember? Ian, you are a monkey farm. Send me loot. If you not send loot, I send my cats to you, monkey farm. Then you have no monkey farm left. Send loot. Send loot now. It will always be one of my favorite emails of all time. The last time Dr. Lewis Turry was on Coast to Coast, writes Georgia, one of his predictions was for December 6th, 2007. The prediction was, according to Georgia, tainted soul kill secret to light. Tainted soul kill secret to light. She says, sounds like the Omaha Mall shooting on December 5th. John wrote to say, Ian, I live in Lincoln, Nebraska, about 50 miles from Omaha. I understand that the person that did the killing in the mall in Omaha was once under care at a state mental home, but that he was released after an insurance company refused to pay for any more of his treatment. Don't know that myself, but he says, in hindsight, everybody would have been better off if the state of Nebraska would have just continued to treat him. If you could you ask your guest coming up, Dr. Anne Blake Tracy, if this sort of thing happens a lot? Thank you, John. We will ask her about the shooting. It won't be from that perspective per se, but I will run that by her because I know that insurance has something to do with this, and she certainly has her ear to the ground on any of these shooting stories and the way in which they are related to mental illness and to drugs. Hi, Ian. I'm a big fan of Coast to Coast and Dean Koontz, writes Patty in Ottawa. I heard your previous interview with Dean and really enjoyed it. I have a question I hope you will ask Dean, because I know I'm not the only fan out here waiting to know this. When is the third book to the Frankenstein trilogy coming out? Please give us an update. Well, all I can do, Patty, is ask next hour, and I will. But first, Charles Osman is standing by. He is currently senior fellow at the Institute for Global Futures, a consulting group which provides strategic research, analysis, and technical due diligence, working for Fortune 500 companies and others. And good evening, Charles.
Good evening, indeed.
All right, so always a pleasure. I hear you had wheels down tonight. Where were you flying in from?
Oh, no. I was actually here in California, but I've just been working on several different projects.
Ah, well, in your email you said terra firma, so it sounded like you were...
Oh, well, I was just meaning local area, but that can be anywhere, South Bay and all sorts of places.
That's totally fine. So thank you for giving us some last-minute time on this. I thought it was interesting that you had a reflection going... Let's go back to our conversation about the so-called missing Iran nuke, which was being transferred from one Air Force base to another. Do you want to set the table for that,
yes,
Charles?
Yes, of course, indeed. This goes back a few weeks, and of course, we talked about this before. There was a flap, as it will, about this idea that 6 and then perhaps 5 and now perhaps 6 again, we're still not certain about this, fully armed stealth cruise missiles. These were the top-of-the-line cruise missiles. There's several different flavors, and this was the best of the best. We're outfitted with a type of warhead that's what's called a variable yield warhead, which is amongst the most sophisticated warheads we have of this kind, which means they can go anywhere from, say, 5 kilotons, which is quite small, to something much larger. And the significance here is that these things were strapped on literally to the wings of a B-52 and flown from Minot Air Force Base to Barksdale, which is one of the main transfer points for things heading to the Middle East. And for quite a number of reasons, I had some personal experience in this area years ago. I just happen to know a little bit about the protocol for handling nuclear ordnance. Every aspect of this situation was so completely outside the range of probabilities I see it to be. I just couldn't understand how this could happen. And I mean, unless security and handling of ordnance protocols have changed drastically in the past 20 years, I just can't imagine this being possible. So I began looking at this more carefully. And the further I looked, the more... well, odd it became. I had some theories, but this kind of confirmed my theory. And I proposed the idea at the time that maybe, just maybe, this was part of some kind of either a false flag operation in the midst of being tried, or something to do with trying to eventually force us into a conflict with Iran, either with a device being detonated and then being blamed on them, or in some way forcing Iran to sort of respond to some kind of a threat that we'd use a nuclear weapon in. In either case, I let that rest, and everybody thought about that for a while. What I find extremely interesting is that now we have this NIA report from 16 different agencies, all at the same time in unison, with no exceptions, saying, wait a minute, we have hard evidence that Iran has in fact suspended, at least temporarily, its nuclear weapons program going back to the year 2003. This is a big deal, because at that time, we were at DEFCON 2 status for a bit. We had 3 aircraft carrier groups sitting off the Straits of Hormuz. We had 1,700 targets defined. We had, you know, an entire battle plan ready to go. I mean, at a moment's notice. That entire process now has been put on hold because of this report being released. And I propose to you and to the audience, maybe or maybe not, but I have some thoughts about why I think this way, that public awareness, the fact that people were talking about this, wasn't just a mistake or geez, some bombs got flown around somewhere. No. This was far too much of a serious, unbelievably serious breach of protocol to just be some casual mistake. A lot of people started asking questions. You put me on the air, and I appreciate that. Other people from around the world, from different countries, are also speaking the same idea. And lo and behold, a couple weeks later, suddenly this report comes out. Now, call it a coincidence if you will, that's fine, but I tend to think the two may be related. That was my basic premise.
Okay. And I think that's interesting. Now, help me understand this, though, in that sense that you said, and we were kind of anticipating that there might be one of these false flag operations. How is calling off any nuclear effort to create a bomb? I mean, that's sort of nuclear effort by Iran.
Because that was our excuse to go in. That was, if you read, I mean, I have pages and pages of documentation. I certainly invite you to do the same if you want to do your own research,
right,
or anyone can.
Right.
But if you read the Senate report, if you read the NIE documents themselves, which you can, you can clearly see where they say, well, wait a minute. Now, the whole reason for going into Iran, I'm just paraphrasing, was because of the premise that nuclear weapons were on the verge of being produced or actually in hand now. And they made it very clear. The evidence does not support that. We're talking 16 different agencies and people
right
from all over the world.
That was a little weird when everybody came out all at once. That was a little strange.
We haven't seen
that kind of unison before.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. This is my theory, and I have some evidence, at least personal evidence, I might toss into this. I believe there was something like a failsafe going on, for anyone who's ever seen the film. The basic concept was he had sort of a battle brewing, or kind of a Mason-Dixon line within the Pentagon and other senior officials who said, look, you had the hardcore group that wanted to go in, regardless of what, you know, the PNAC doctrine types, and then you had the rest of the folks who said, no, this is a horrible idea. This would be a disaster. We'd get Russia involved, possibly China. It would be, you know, World War III. And if you remember, Bush himself kept talking about World War III, if you recall, just even 2 weeks ago. A lot of people, for months and months and months, knew this was sort of bubbling in the background. They thought maybe they could delay this, maybe they could just kind of brush things aside and kind of calm things down. But when they realized that this was that close to actually being done, to where the button was about to be pushed, I think there was a sense of desperation. They figured, okay, look, this is it. We either do it now or it's probably going to happen and nobody can stop it. I think that's what happened.
Well, let me push a little side note here.
Please,
because you believe that this program, Coast to Coast, has at least some reach into the inner beltway of
yes,
Washington, D.C.
I have friends in D.C. that listen to it all the time. I can give you an example. I actually went to talk to the FDA, not about this kind of stuff at all, but about nanotechnology in medical applications. I was given a call one day and they said, would you fly out to Maryland and give a presentation on this topic? And I said, fine. When I flew out there, the lady who was in charge of that project said that she actually heard me on Coast to Coast the previous week. Now, I was kind of stunned, but I mean, when I was there, and I've been to Washington, you know, quite a number of times, and every time I go out there, I'm kind of surprised at the range of people who actually listen to this program, which is why I was so compelled to want to go on the air.
Right.
And, you know, I'm taking a bit of a career risk. I mean, it's clear, I'm not getting anything from this, I'm not making any
right
money, there's no book sales, I'm not doing any seminars, and I'm probably going to lose some credibility among some, but I felt so strongly, that the stakes were so huge, I'm willing to put my own credibility in line in order to prevent something horrible from happening. Because I know how
that
horrible this could be if it went wrong.
Well, and I think it's interesting. I mean, regardless of whether you are right or not, I think it's always worthy to start these conversations.
Absolutely.
And if you've asked a really good question and the answer just turns out to be no, it's still a really good question. And I thought everything you were pushing at was interesting last time. So if nothing else, then you've done that much. And I think, you know, I mean, I wonder whether some of this is just the political climate has changed. Some Republican strategists perhaps are looking at a loss of the White House.
They already
in
have
2000.
They've already lost the White House. This is a done deal. Nobody, believe me, the Republicans are hurting so badly right now that they're just trying to do damage control. It's beyond that. A number of military people also listen to CDC, and I can talk about that a little bit, but I have a lot of friends out there in different places, and I get surprising amounts of email whenever I go in the air.
Well, tell me, I got 60 seconds. What do you mean people in the military listen?
There
tell
is
me
people
about
who
that
serve in different branches and who have relatives that serve and people in certain positions. I can't really be specific, but I get answers when I ask questions. People, I still have contacts, even though
right
I haven't been involved in the National Lab for like 20 years. I've still have a lot of friends out there that involve these industries, and through them I get a lot of interesting sidelights. And so I keep my hands open enough so that people can talk to me, and it's not a big breach of any kind of security.
Well, we're counting on you bringing those non-breaches of security to us as quickly as possible. Thank you, Charles Ostman, for making time for a senior fellow at the Institute for Global Futures, seeing a connection between this major reversal by the Bush administration. How about that for good old reference? Ray the Hustle. How many people remember that? And we will we'll explore another connection, perhaps, or maybe not this time, between these SSRIs and another shooting. This time in Omaha. Is this one different? What does Dr. Ann Blake Tracy see in the shootings done by Robert Hawkins and the connections to the past high school, college, and work-related shooters that have gone on over the last 10, 15 years or so? Next on Coast to Coast AM. We give you the numbers not because we know there's a way that you're going to interact with Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, but just in case you might want to. She's back again. We'll be talking about the shooting at the Omaha, Nebraska Mall and the connection that may or may not exist this time with an SSRI, although that's what the boy was on, Robert Hawkins. And we just always like to check in with Dr. Ann Blake Tracy around these stories because she has a way of getting information and processing the information very differently about the connection between these antidepressants and these terrible tragedies. Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Ponet. Dr. Ann Blake Tracy is the director of the International Coalition for Drug Awareness. That also is in her website address, drugawareness.org. You can link up to her through coasttocoastam.com. Been too long, Dr. Ann Blake Tracy. How are you?
Sure have, Ian.
How's your growing family going? Any more grandbabies since we last spoke?
Oh, yes. Another one on the way.
Oh, mazel tov for that.
So far, all boys.
Hey, you know, I thought about you the other day when there was that story. This is a little sidebar before we get to the main piece, but I remember this conversation with you. There was a story that just recently ranked the least happy states in the United States, and Utah was ranked as the least happy state in the United States. And didn't you tell me why? That it had something to do with the character of large Mormon communities like you would find in Utah that don't drink coffee and don't drink alcohol, so they eat a lot of sugar. Was that you that told me that?
Well, half of that I told you. The other half came from psychiatrists.
Oh, okay. Well, what's the story on that? Is it that there's a lot of sweets?
They
consume
a lot of sugar, a lot of sugar, a lot of Jell-O, a lot of ice cream, all of which increase serotonin and produce depression.
Ah, that's what it is.
By causing low blood sugar. And so that led them to be the antidepressant capital of the nation. And that, of course, led them to be the most depressed state in the nation, which I told them 2 decades ago was going to happen if they didn't cut out the antidepressants.
Well,
because they caused depression.
They cause more depression. And you believe that people can change their diet and significantly reduce the effects of depression anyway.
Yes, I do. And so does Dr. Candace Pert, who discovered the serotonin binding process that made all of the antidepressants possible.
And what's interesting about that was that you were so far ahead of the curve on this, and I know I've credited you in private conversation, I think I have on the air too, that, I mean, now it's so interesting to see somebody as formidable as the New York Times Magazine do a whole piece on Effexor and kind of the story of Effexor. That was just a couple of Sundays ago. And it's like, I heard about that 10 years ago. I mean, you were like way ahead of that. And now everybody else is. Tell the story real quickly of Effexor and how little research they had done on that and how many people were essentially being used as guinea pigs, weren't they?
Well, that's the truth with every one of these. What's interesting about Effexor, and I haven't seen that piece, and I wonder if they included it, did they mention that Effexor now has homicidal ideation listed as a side effect?
They did. I believe they did.
Good.
My wife was reading me sections of it as we were driving along. It wasn't.
Uh-huh.
Very flattering. All right, so here you are. You've always been sort of pre-dawn on this connection between antidepressants and violent outbursts like we see in schools and we have seen now here again at the mall with this 19-year-old Robert Hawkins. I think the story we're hearing now is that he was off of his SSRIs. Is that the latest you've heard, too?
Drug companies have been there already, huh? No. You hear all of it, and it doesn't matter whether he was on it or off of it. What matters is that he took them and had recently been on them. According to his friend, he started them again about 2 months ago. He left the foster program apparently in August of 2006. Generally, when that happens, they're pretty much on their own. They can no longer afford the medications, and so many of them go off cold turkey, which is the worst way to go off. Never, ever, ever do that.
Never leave an SSRI cold turkey.
Never. According to the FDA, if you abruptly change the dose, whether you're going up or down, you can produce suicide, hostility, or psychosis, which we saw all of in Omaha.
Well, except that it seemed like he also had a very long history of that type of violent behavior or other things that happened seemingly before he was ever on any of those drugs. So may this just be a case of somebody who was violent, somebody who had enough of these, enough other biochemical imbalances, that this one may not be your textbook case.
Even if he was, why push him over the edge with a drug that we know can cause this? I mean, I don't know if you caught the story in August. The head of the National Institute of Mental Health, Dr. Thomas Insull, came out and said, hey, we've got this new study. We've tried ketamine for depression. Ketamine is Special K. It's a sister drug to PCP. It's a dissociative anesthetic. He said, whoa, gets rid of depression immediately. It produces the same effect as antidepressants. It's just that antidepressants take a little bit longer to produce it, several weeks, months. But ketamine gets rid of it just like that. It's gone. Well, why wouldn't it be gone? It's an anesthetic. If you anesthetize someone, of course it's gone. He said we're producing the same effect with antidepressants. You have seen those brainwave patterns in my book that shows that the patient is in an anesthetic sleep state and talking to people, right?
Yeah, it's been a while, but I do remember something like that.
Right. So they actually came right out and admitted it. There wasn't a reporter in the country that caught that. They're all standing back going, wow, look what ketamine does. Maybe we can come up with a drug like that that doesn't make you psychotic.
Right.
That can actually get rid of depression quickly. And I'm going, didn't you hear him say that antidepressants work the same way? Now, if this kid had been on PCP, would anybody be surprised at what he did?
No. In fact, even if he had just, if in the last month he had stopped taking, he had stopped being a regular user of PCP, I think you'd have people go, well, there's the after effect of a drug-addled brain.
I know.
Right.
I know. And yet we know these drugs work the same way, and I've tried to say that for almost two decades.
Well, what's your battle like these days against the major drug companies on this issue? You've had some major successes, and I know that you've been able to get warning labels changed. Whole countries have been, you know, staying away from allowing kids to take SSRIs and any number of other issues. Are you getting a lot of pushback from the drug companies directly to you? Are you seeing, are you locking horns with them, or are they just ignoring
it? They make $200 million a day on antidepressants alone. They're not worried about me.
$200 million a day?
Hmm. Yeah, my $20 a day fighting them isn't doing a whole heck of a lot, Ian.
$20 million a day?
A day.
Wow. Yeah, I think that, I mean, I'm sorry, Dr. Chase, but I think that does pretty much define losing battle.
That's,
wow. I didn't know that.
No, you just kind of save who you can. Russia did just send Moscow, Russia sent a camera crew over, a news crew, to do a documentary on my work because they see what's happening in this country and they don't want it there.
Have there been other places where that sort of thing has happened?
Oh, yeah.
Around the world?
Yeah.
Okay. Any of them that you've been involved with? Because I'm always curious when they come across your desk, frequently they're asking for your expert testimony.
Yes, they generally are, but they're very open to learning about the drugs, too. Also, there was a group out of Australia recently that wanted to know more, in particular about the REM sleep behavior disorder that I talk about so much that these drugs cause. Nightline did a special on that last week with Dr. Carla Schenck, who's one of the leading researchers in that area. But, you know, these drugs cause 86% of the cases.
I want to leave a
nobody talking about that.
I want to leave a little time here in case we get a question for you here, so I don't want to take up all the time, but just tell me real quickly, are there new incarnations of these same old drugs that are on the market now that people may not know by their new brand name?
All kinds. All kinds. And one thing that really scares me is this new drug for restless leg syndrome.
Right. I was actually going to... what is it about
restless
that?
Restless leg syndrome is caused by an antidepressant anyway. And then all this new drug is basically dextromethorphan, which is in cough syrups that you're never supposed to mix with an antidepressant. And they're prescribing it to people that are on these.
Yeah, I've read about this, that not even all doctors agree that restless leg syndrome is a real problem.
No, it is. If you take an antidepressant, it'll cause it real quick.
Okay. But I mean that it's not really a real, like a syndrome that exists outside of the side effect of a drug.
That's a side effect, yes.
Okay, and that's it.
If you mix the two together, you end up like Anna Nicole Smith's son, Daniel. You die suddenly from multiple organ failure because your serotonin level is way too high, which shuts down the major organs of the body.
You know, let me ask you about that, too. And again, just real quickly, if we can, because I know we got a couple of callers here. But we're talking with Dr. Anne Blake Tracy, the director of the International Coalition for Drug Awareness. Have you heard more about the Anna Nicole Smith case in particular? Have you been following any of that?
Yes, of course, because Anna Nicole Smith was on these drugs forever. I mean, people just made fun of her the same way they're doing Britney Spears right now, because of her medication.
And Britney Spears is on these type of meds too? That's why you think she's acting so goofy?
Paxil. Nicole Richie on Prozac. I mean, they talk about it. It's sad. Nobody realizes that the drugs are causing all of these things for which they're making fun of them.
We have West of the Rockies, Sam in San Francisco on Coast to Coast AM. Sam?
Yes, how you doing?
You're talking with Dr. Anne Blake Tracy.
Okay. I was wondering if you think there's a possibility that the shooter at the mall in Nebraska was possibly under MK Ultra, maybe, or some type of special drug that the government developed, maybe, or something?
Well, what's interesting, one thing you can read in my book is the history of mind control drugs. And there's a little story about the CIA and how they wanted LSD as their drug of choice. And, of course, they got in trouble for all the things that they did. And Congress held a special hearing and slapped their hands and said, okay, you can't do this anymore. You can't test this drug on an unsuspecting public. And the CIA at that point said, okay, we won't do this anymore. But what we'll do is we'll look to the pharmaceutical companies to see what they come up with in the way of a drug used for psychoanalysis that we can then use for mind control. What do you think were on the designers' tables right then? These.
Brendan, east of the Rockies in Kentucky for Dr. Anne Blake Tracy on Coast to Coast AM. Brendan?
Yes. I had a question. The thing with depression is, do you think that depression is lessened, I mean, seriously, by sugar. I mean, you look at how many people have depression opposed to what it used to be like in the olden times. Nowadays, I think depression has just become a part of our reality, and depression can be dealt with just by, you know, learning that our surroundings are different than the times before. I think that our government and different means of media have guided us into believing that the medications are needed because we're depressed, but I think it's a natural function of the human body.
All right. Fair point. I don't think you find much of an argument there with Dr. Tracy.
Yeah. We do have new studies, Ian, showing that ecotherapy, walking in the woods, is 90% effective for depression as opposed to 30 to 40% for an antidepressant.
That does not surprise me one bit.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. And almost everything is more effective than these drugs,
but
right? I mean,
bring in $200 million a day.
Right. What else? I know I stopped you for my exclamation, but what else?
Also, we have the studies showing that exercise for half an hour, three times a week, is 8 times more effective than any antidepressant out there.
8 times more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, again, this is university, academic, peer-reviewed kind of study.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And Dr. Candace Pert, who discovered the serotonin binding process that made all these possible and headed the brain chemistry department at NIH for 13 years, says, wow, diet and exercise work better. Why don't we listen to her?
Yeah, if they're not going to listen to you, why don't they listen to her?
She calls me a heroine and my work extremely important, so go figure.
Yes. Oh, and it is. All right, we had time for one more. I'm sorry, who was it? Michelle on Coast to Coast AM, real quickly for Dr. Amblake Tracy. Michelle?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question was that I have been diagnosed with major depression and fibromyalgia for the last 20 years, and I'm on one antidepressant now, and I was wondering perhaps if I tapered off, would it be better to stop taking an antidepressant altogether, or if I can, you know, wean myself off?
First of all, fibromyalgia is a condition of high serotonin, so you're taking an antidepressant that increases serotonin and therefore should produce fibromyalgia. So, of course, that will get better. We do know also that the hypothesis behind antidepressants is backwards. Therefore, it's actually causing depression rather than curing it. So it would seem to me from the science behind it that, yes, you would be better, but you have to know how to wean off properly. I have a tape or a CD that tells you exactly the safest way that we have found over the years to come off, and you need to be very, very careful doing that.
And you can link up to Dr. Amblake Tracy through coasttocoastam.com. Get all the information you need there. Consider it. And thank you, Dr. Tracy. As always, it's a pleasure. And look forward to talking to you again in the future. I hope it won't be because of more bad news, but because of more good news about progress you've been making. So thank you. And have a wonderful holiday. And coming up next, Dean Koontz is back. Master of horror, suspense, sci-fi, and dogs. The new book is called The Darkest Evening of the Year, and it will be that next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.